Today's daf is Nedarim daf Lamed Zayin. We are holding on daf Lamed Vav Amud Beis, about five lines before the end of the page, at the two dots. So the Mishnah mentioned that if you have a neder that someone, you're not allowed to get hana'ah from a person, that person cannot teach you mikra, but he could teach you medrash, halachos, and agados. So first we're going to discuss what the difference is. Why is he allowed to teach you medrash, halachos, and agados? That's apparently not called hana'ah, yet teaching you mikra is called hana'ah. Then the Gemara is going to get into the discussion of getting paid in order to teach mikra, and it's going to give two reasons that a person is allowed to get paid in order to teach mikra, either because he's not really getting paid for teaching the mikra, he's getting paid for babysitting, because the people who are first learning mikra are typically very young, or he's not getting paid for teaching mikra, he's getting paid for teaching trup, and trup is not d'oraisa, so therefore he's not really teaching Torah when he's teaching the trup. The Gemara then has two proofs that the heter is about trup, but the Gemara rejects both of those proofs, that's the correct heter, and then at the bottom of Amud Aleph we're going to get into the issue of schar Shabbos, getting paid for work done on Shabbos, and specifically how it's mutter to get paid for work done on Shabbos as long as it's paid behavla'a, along with payment that comes for other days of work as well. And then on Amud Beis, the Gemara is going to discuss why each of the two opinions as to why it's mutter to teach mikra for money rejects the other opinion. And the Gemara is then going to bring a proof that trup in fact is da'oraisa, not that like we assume originally that trup is only midrabanan. And then the daf is going to conclude with examples of various things that are alachal Moshe Misinai, mikra sofrim, iture sofrim, karyon velo ksivan, ksivan velo karyon. Will discuss what all those things mean. All those things are alachal Moshe Misinai. So let us begin. Five lines from the bottom of the page, daf lamid vav amid beis. So the Mishnah had said, if you have a neder, someone that you're not allowed to get hana'ah from somebody, melamdo medrash alach svag, that somebody is allowed to teach you medrash, halachas, and agados, but that somebody may not teach you mikra. Apparently learning mikra from him is called hana'ah. Mikra my time lo yilamdenu. Why is it that he can't teach you mikra? Mishum de gamani, because he's giving you hana'ah when he teaches you mikra. Frak the Gemara, well, I enjoy learning mikra, but you know what else I enjoy learning? Everything. Midrash nami kamani le. It's very enjoyable to learn medrash as well. Isn't that also considered that he's getting hana'ah? Why would that not be considered the same hana'ah that medrash is? Shulchan Aruch writes in some Reish Chaf Aleph that if a person asks a sefer on his friend, it's asr for the mudar to learn from the sefer. And the Taz asks, why should it be asr? If he has a neder hana'ah from a shofar, you're allowed to blow the shofar for the mitzvah, because we generally have a principle, mitzvah slav lehanus nitnu. The hana'ah you get in the performance of a mitzvah does not halachically qualify as hana'ah. So why don't we say the same thing over here, that you should be able to learn in the sefer, because mitzvah slav lehanus nitnu. It's not called hana'ah when you're learning from the sefer. So the Taz writes that since it's not normal to lend out svarim without charging for them, this is before the printing press, so svarim were very, very rare, very expensive, and you certainly wouldn't let them out from under your eye unless you were being paid handsomely for it. So since it wasn't normal to lend out svarim without charging for them, so it's considered that he is getting hana'ah because he's saving him money when the person is using the sefer. He's not going to have to pay for the sefer. And then the Taz also suggests that even if though mitzvah slav lehanus nitnu, but if you actually get hana'ah saguf at the time that you're doing the mitzvah, meaning it's not just the hana'ah of the fact that you're being mekayim a mitzvah is not called hana'ah, but if you actually enjoy it also, that's still called hana'ah. The enjoyment the person gets is called hana'ah. So he says, Yepkudei Hashem Yishar Mesam, we have a halacha that we're not allowed to learn Torah on Tisha B'Av because Torah brings us such simcha. So granted, the kiyum mitzvah of Talmud Torah may not be called hana'ah, but the actual enjoyment that one gets from learning, that's absolutely going to be considered hana'ah, says the Taz. But anyway, so our Gemara is asking, why should mikra be any different than medrash? Amar Shmuel b'makom shenotan schar al mikra ve'notan schar al medrash. That we must be referring to a place where the custom is that people pay a teacher to teach mikra, but they don't pay a teacher to teach medrash. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky has a, not this one, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky in the Mavot to Emes Liakov on Chumash has a discussion of what the word mikra means. Does mikra mean only Chumash, or does mikra mean Chumash and Neviim and Ksuvim? And he says it really depends on the context. Sometimes the Gemara will say there's mikra and there's Neviim, and so obviously then mikra would be only Chumash. But like over here where it says you can teach mikra but not medrash, halachos, etc., Mikra. So you see that Mikra must refer to all of Tanakh, because it never covers Nevi'im and Ksuvim otherwise. So Mikra must. So he said, why would that be? Why would Mikra sometimes refer to Tanakh and sometimes refer to only Torah? So Yaakov points out very beautifully, the word Mikra means to read. So there is something about Tanakh that is, makes it more readable than the rest of Torah, because the rest of Torah is Torah Shebal Peh. So Mikra, Tanakh, is the only thing that you're allowed to read from a from a text. It's the only thing that we're allowed to write and read out of a text. Why would Chumash sometimes be called more Mikra than Nevi'im and Ksuvim? So he says the phenomenal Chiddush. He says, because when it comes to Nevi'im and Ksuvim, let's say one day you find yourself in a base medrash somewhere and you don't know how to learn at all, but you don't want to waste your time, you don't want to be doing nothing, so but you do know how to read Hebrew. So you open up a Navi, you find a Sefer Yehoshua, you find a Sefer Yirmiyahu. So you open it up and you start reading from it without understanding anything. Are you Mekayim the mitzvah of Talmud Torah? Says Rabbi Yaakov, no. It is zero kiyum mitzvah of Talmud Torah without understanding in the Limud HaTorah. But, he says, when it comes to Chumash, since Chumash are the direct words of the Ribbono Shel Olam, it never had to be translated through the mind of a Navi. It's the direct words, Moshe Rabbeinu got up as Baklari HaMi'ira, word for word from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, just reading the words of Chumash are an accomplishment. It's something. It's not the highest level of Talmud Torah, obviously, but it's some kiyum of Talmud Torah. So Mikra, it could refer to Chumash more so than Nevi'im and Ksuvim, because just reading Chumash, even if you don't understand it at all, is a partial kiyum. And that's what he says. That's why he says maybe the proper minhag is that when you're doing Shnayim Mikra Vecha Targum, is to just read it through once, and then read it a second time, pasuk by pasuk, with the targum, to show that there's two kiyumim in the way that we learn chumash. There's one kiyum of just reading, and you read it without any translation, without any rashi, without anything. And then there's a separate kiyum, a higher kiyum, of actually reading and understanding, where you're going to read together with rashi. That's what he suggests. Maybe it would be the best minhag of Shneimer. It's a big machlokas if that's the best minhag, but that's not any of the classic opinions. The classical opinions are different, but that's what he suggests would be the best minhag. So anyway, so the Gemara says over here, we're talking about a place where people get paid to teach Mikra, but they don't get paid to teach Medrash. And therefore, when the guy is teaching you Mikra, he's giving you Anah, because he's saving you money. Whereas the one who's teaching you Medrash isn't giving you any Anah, because he's not saving you any money. Says Gemara, my Pascha, why would we just naturally assume that we're talking about a case? Why would the Mishnah set it up in the kind of place where they teach Mikra for money, but not Medrash? Why not talk about a place where they teach Medrash for money and not Mikra? And it must be that that's a thing, that there's a reason to do that, that there's a reason specifically to charge money for Mikra and not to charge money for Medrash. So it says in our HaKamashma, Niz L'Chiddush, Da'afilu b'makam sh'notan schara l'mikra, shari l'mishkal, ala Medrash lo shari l'mishkal. Even in a place where they have a custom that they charge money for teaching Mikra, that's permissible. They're allowed to charge money for teaching Mikra, but one is not permitted to charge money for teaching Medrash. One is only allowed to charge money for teaching Mikra. So it's not just randomly we happen to be talking about the kind of place where they charge for Mikra and not for Medrash. No, it's because that's the halacha. The halacha is you're only allowed to charge for Mikra. You're not allowed to charge for teaching other things. So Maishna Medrash Shalom, why is it that you're not allowed to charge for Medrash? Tichsiv, because the pasuk says, Va'osi tziva Hashem ba'esahi l'lameid eschem. Moshe Rabbeinu says, Hashem commanded me to teach you the Torah, uksiv. And the pasuk says, Re'ei lamadati eschem chukim u'mishpatim kasher tzivani Hashem. That I have taught you chukim u'mishpatim like Hashem commanded me. So we darshan that what's Moshe Rabbeinu saying? In what way is what he teaches exactly like Hashem taught him? Ma ani bechinam, afatem nami bechinam. That just like I teach it to you for free, so too you also should teach it for free. Meaning, not like Hashem. I mean, he's saying you should teach it the way I'm teaching it to you. So Moshe Rabbeinu is saying that just like I teach it to you for free, so too when you pass on the Torah and teach it to others, it should be for free. So you see from there that it's considered something that has to be done for free. So the bottom line is the Gemara says, well, wait a second. And then how come you're allowed to charge for Mikra then? If apparently it has to be something that's taught for free, then why are you allowed to charge? So the Gemara says, Rav Amar Schar Shimur, Rav Yochanan Amar Schar Pisuk Ta'amim. Two possibilities why one would be permitted to charge for teaching Mikra. Either you're not charging for the actual teaching, you're charging for the babysitting, because the little children, ben chamesh l'mikra, 5-year-olds are already supposed to be learning mikra. So between the age of 5 and 10 is when children are typically mastering Tanakh. So during that time period when they're mastering Tanakh, they still need babysitting. They may know all of Tanakh, but they still need babysitting. So you're paying, you're getting paid not for the teaching, but for the babysitting. And the other answer is, no, you're getting paid for the schar pisuk tamim, for teaching them the trap, teaching them how to break up the pasuk. And since that's not the oraisa, the Gemara is assuming at this point, since trap is not the oraisa, therefore you're allowed to get paid for teaching that. But any part of Torah that actually is the oraisa, you're not allowed to get paid for teaching. The difference between the two answers, the Ran points out, is to teach mikra to a gadol. If you hold that you're only allowed to get paid for babysitting, well, a gadol doesn't need babysitting. But if it's about the trap, well, as long as you're teaching him the trap, then you're still allowed to get paid. And the Ran writes on the first very wide line, at the end of the line, Hilkach le'inyan halacha, kiven de kaimelan de rav rav yochanan, alach rav yochanan, naktinan da afilu mi gadol shari lital schar al mikra, vekachim divrei rav perek vav milchus nedarim. Since typically when you have machlokas, rav and rav yochanan, we pass on like rav yochanan, you're allowed to get paid even when you teach a gadol mikra, because what you're getting paid for is not really the babysitting, what you're getting paid for is the pisuk tamim, you're getting paid for the teaching of the trup, and as long as you teach the gadol the trup, that one is permitted to get paid for. Now the Gemara had quoted this pasuk Asher Tzivani Hashem as the source for the idea that you're not allowed to get paid for learning Torah, for teaching Torah rather. So there's machlokes rishonim how we see that in the pasuk of Kasher Tzivani Hashem. The Ran writes Kasher Tzivani Hashem has to be that just that Hashem commanded me to teach you for free, because it can't be that He commanded me to teach for schar, because since Hashem commanded Moshe to teach for free, you see that there's a mitzvah to teach for free. Meaning, there's no way Hashem told Moshe a special command to charge money for it. So he commanded him something about teaching. So it must be that He commanded him to teach for free. That's how the Ran says. The Rush says no. Kasher tzivani Hashem means just like Hashem taught me for free, so too I'm supposed to teach Bnei Yisrael for free. And since Moshe Rabbeinu said to them, "Limadti Eschem," we learn that you have to teach Torah b'chinam. The way I taught, Moshe Rabbeinu was trying to tell them how to teach Torah. Tosa says, Mistama, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't get any payment when he taught Torah, because Moshe Rabbeinu was independently wealthy. So if someone's independently wealthy, why would he take a salary? There's no need for it. So Mistama, he didn't get paid any money. And since Mistama, he didn't get paid any money, so once he taught, and he's telling everyone else to teach the way he taught, so it must be that he taught for free, and therefore everyone else should also teach for free. What about other mitzvahs? So you're not allowed to get paid to teach Torah. You're allowed to get paid to do other mitzvahs. So someone who owns a supermarket just emailed me the other day. He said, "Is it a mitzvah that I provide kosher food for the Jewish people, even though they pay me for the kosher food? Is that meaning? He feels like he's doing a tremendous service to Klal Yisrael, and he is doing a tremendous service to Klal Yisrael. It happens to be a pretty good living, also. So that's the question: is a person allowed to get paid for a mitzvah in general? Now that obviously you're allowed to get paid for. That's a business of selling food. Well, so what if it's stama mitzvah? That's nothing to do with the business. You just want to get paid for doing a mitzvah. So that's a discussion whether one is allowed to get paid. The Rambam in the Pirush Mishnayos in the beginning of this parak says that you're not allowed to get paid for a Shavas Aveda. So Tosyantif says that there are places, the Gemara mentioned that there are places that there were no Telschar, that they did get paid for a Shavas Aveda. So the Rav Isser Zalmelzer in Neven Asel says that the Rambam holds that the Isser is only on Limud Torah and teaching dinim to other people, but all other mitzvahs there would be no iser. The fact that you're not allowed to get paid for a Shavas Aveda is that's only when the minug was not to get paid, because if you're in a place where the minig is that people don't give rewards for a Shavas Aveda, so you don't have zuchus tviya, you don't have the ability to claim money from the guy that you're giving it back to. So that's but it's not technically a halachic thing that one is not allowed to get paid. But the Rambam holds that it's dafka din Talmud Torah that one is not allowed to get paid. In Beis Meir on Shulchan Aruch, Chaim Sim Tavkuf Pei Hei, he asks why it's mutter for a Baal Tokeya to get paid on Rosh Hashanah for the tekiyos. It's also to get paid for mitzvos. So he says, based on the Gemara in Kiddushin, that the Gemara in Kiddushin, Daf Nun Ches, says that even though you're not allowed to take payment for hazah and kiddush b'mei chatos to prepare the Parah Aduma waters, but on the schlepping of the ashes and the filling up the water and doing all the preparations, that you're allowed to get paid. And the Rashi says the reason you're allowed to get paid for those steps in the process is because it's a big tircha. It's a real big bother. It's very annoying. It's a lot of work to do. So when it's a lot of work, that you're allowed to get paid for. So says the Beis Meir, you see from there that any time you have a mitzvah that involves tircha, so to train yourself to learn how to blow all the tekiyos and to do with two breaths and with one breath and the shorm tshuva, it takes a lot of time, it takes a lot of preparation. So since it's a tircha, says the Beis Meir, that's why you're allowed to get paid for blowing the shofar. However, it's not so pashut that that's what Rashi means, that you're allowed to get paid for something that's a tircha. Rashi and Kiddushin might mean that those parts aren't really the mitzvah. It's only a hashem. I mean, the schlepping the water and the ashes, that's not really the mitzvah. So that's just a tircha. It's not that any mitzvah that happens to be a bother, you're allowed to get paid for. But when it's not a mitzvah, it's simply a tircha, then you're allowed to get paid for it. The question is by doctors. The Torah writes in Yeradeya, in the name of the Ramban, that a doctor is not allowed to get paid for healing people because he has a mitzvah to heal people, so he can't get paid for a mitzvah. But he says he can get schar batala. He can get schar for not working on a construction job during that time or something, or doing something else while he's busy healing people. Or he says he gets schar for his tircha, for whatever tircha there is that is involved in healing people. So the Beis Yosef quotes that the Ramban proves that you're allowed to get schar tircha from the fact that from that Gemara in Kiddushin, that same Gemara, that they bring schar for, they get schar for the hava'a and the miloy of the water for to prepare the paraduma ashes, the paraduma water. So the Machna Ephraim is not sure. Does Ramban mean that you're allowed to take payment for the refuah itself if it itself is a burden, or does it just mean that he's allowed to take payment for the burden of schlepping himself to the hospital, but the actual refuah, which is the mitzvah, he's not allowed to get schar for? The same issue. How do you understand that Gemara in Kiddushin, that you're allowed to get schar for the schlepping of the water and the ashes and all that stuff? Is it that you're getting schar for the mitzvah, you're allowed to get payment for the mitzvah if the mitzvah itself is a burden? Or no, you're allowed to get payment for those things that are burdensome, but not for the part that's actually a mitzvah. Okay, so the Gemara...
Aren't there like plenty of non-Chomesh Rabbeim who get paid?
Yes, so what the heter is a good kasha. So babysitting and other things, they say, that this may have been one of those things that Torah would have been discontinued from Klal Yisrael had it not been for being able to pay people. Because even worse than getting paid to teach is getting paid to learn Torah. Right, that's the, and yet there are kolim all over the place, and we generally view that within reason as a very good thing that there are people being paid to learn Torah. But that's what they say. Eslas Hashem Eferu Sorasecha was the only way to ensure that Torah would continue in Klal Yisrael, especially Rav Aaron Cutler, when he built Lakewood, felt that especially after the Second World War, where there was a tremendous dearth of Torah learning that needed to be filled, he thought that it was tremendous eslasos to do whatever we can to get people learning Torah. But yeah, the kash is better than Torah. Okay, so so there are two reasons that you can get paid for teaching Mikra. We said it's one for babysitting, and the other is trup. So now the Gemara is going to bring two proofs that the heter is that you're getting paid for the trup. Tanan, it's said in the Mishnah Lo Yivam Denu Mikra, that you're not allowed, if there's a nether, that someone's not allowed to get hana from you, you're not allowed to teach that person Mikra. So Bishlam L'mad Yom Rishchar Pisuk Taimim, Hainu D'Lo Yivam Denu. If it's all about teaching him the trap, I understand. You're not allowed to teach him, the trap because that's giving him hana. L'mad Yom Rishchar Shimur, Gadol Bar Shimuru. But if we're talking about Schar Shimur, Mistama, the Mishnah is talking about where it's a Gadol that has a neder that he's not allowed to get hana from you. So where's the babysitting that you're providing? There's no babysitting for a Gadol. So don't you see it's a Raya that the payment is for the trap? And says the Gemara, Bekatan Katani. Who says then in the Mishnah, we're talking about a Gadol. Maybe the neder is that you're not allowed to give hana to a child. Ibakata name a sefer of lamid is bun of mikra. It's hard to say it's talking about a katan because the sefer then says, but you're let that guy that has a neder that you're not allowed to get on that he's not allowed to get on up from you. You're allowed to teach his kids mikra. Well, he's probably not a little child that needs babysitting if he has children. So katan bar banim who? What do you think a child is a bar banim? So the answer gemara chisuri mechso vachi katani. You have to add something into the mission. It should read like this: lo yom denu mikra bekatan, that you're not allowed to teach a child mikra if he has an edra na, and im haya gadol melamdo lo ulaban of mikra. But if he's a gadol, you're allowed to teach him because there's no babysitting fee, and you're allowed to teach his children because they're not included in the neder. That's the way to read the Mishnah if you're going to assume that the schar that you're getting is not for trup, but that the schar that you're getting is for babysitting. There's a Chuvus HaRashba proves from our Gemara that a Madir is allowed to teach Torah to the Ben Hamudar, that if a person teaches Ben Chavero Torah, that the father doesn't have to pay him. If I go and I teach someone else's son Torah, the father has no responsibility to pay me. Because if he did have responsibility to pay me, then if he's not allowed to get Hana'ah from me, how am I allowed to teach his son Torah? I'm giving him the Hana'ah of saving him the money that he would normally be obligated to pay. The Ramah in Choshen Mishpat quotes that Rashba, and then he says that the Mordechai is Cholik on the Rashba. So the Shach says, but the Rashba is a good raya. Why is the Mordechai cholik? It's a pretty good raya from our Mishnah that the guy doesn't have to pay you. How could the Mordechai be cholik? So on the side of the Ardea, there's a commentary called the Beis Hillel. The Beis Hillel suggests that the Mordechai will hold like the Ran who says that you're allowed to teach a Ben Mudar just like your Zanas Ishta, just like you support someone's wife. And the Ran explains that a person in Zanas Penosav is talking about where your Zan Bitoras Mitzvah Velo Bitoras Pirin Chov Abal, that you're doing it as a mitzvah, not as a way of paying up a chov to the husband. So here also, talking about you're being melamed as ben chavero l'shem mitzvah. But if you're melamed him l'shem piron, that you're intending to get paid, then ein hachinami would have to pay you. It's only when you're doing l'shem mitzvah that he has no obligation to pay you. Meaning different contexts. Sometimes there are people that expect payment, and sometimes there are people that don't expect payment. You invite a speaker to speak in a community. So typically speaking, when you invite a speaker, they expect payment. They expect that someone will... You invite a speaker to speak in a camp. For some reason, the Minigan camps is that everyone comes and does it for free. That we don't... camp from one camp to the other. It's like a thing that we do for each other to make sure, to make it exciting that that everyone does it for free. So it all depends on context. That's how the Mordechai must understand. So now back in the Gemara, Meisvei, another potential raya that it's all about Pisuk Ta'amim and it's not about babysitting. Tinokos lo korn b'tchila b'shabbos. You shouldn't teach children a parsha of Mikra for the first time on Shabbos, Elashon and Barishon. But the first chazara, once they already learned it during the week, they could do their first chazara on Shabbos. It was the style that they would do lots of chazara with children, which is an appropriate thing to do, till it was mamash shagur b'fihem, that they would just sing over the chumash over and over and over again till they knew it well, like they do if you in the old city, and you know if you ever walk through, you hear the little children in the cheders singing through all the learning. They do it over and over and over again, and they end up knowing the whole thing by heart. So bishlam l'mad yamar schar pisuk taimim hainudein karam l'tchil b'shabbos. I understand if teaching trup is something that people get paid for, so I understand why you shouldn't teach it the first time at Shabbos, because you're teaching something that deserves payment. But if anyway all you're getting paid for is the babysitting, then why can't you do what's the difference between the first time and any other time? You're doing the same babysitting every time. Why is it that you're allowed to teach it the second time and not the first time? What difference does it make? Either way, it's the same babysitting. So it says more of the time, schar pisuk b'shabbos mi aser. But anyway, even if you think that it's all about the trup, would it be aser to get paid for teaching trup on Shabbos? Havla'ahi. When you're getting paid, you're probably not getting paid for just Shabbos' work. You're probably getting paid for all the work, teaching the child throughout the year. Vavla, Mishra Shari, Schar Shabbos Pavla is Mutter. Ditanya, like it says in the following Braisa, and this is which explains the concept of Havla'ah. Hasokhar Sapol Lishmar Satinok, Lishmar Sapara, Lishmar Sazran. You hire someone to do something that's perfectly permissible to do on Shabbos. You're not asking them to do any malacha for you. They're a babysitter. They're there just to watch the child, but you're only hiring them for Shabbos ein nosen l'schar Shabbos. You're not allowed to pay them for work that they're doing on Shabbos. Even though they're doing no malacha, it's just payment for Shabbos. So the person can't get paid for Shabbos, nor can you give payment for Shabbos. L'fichach, im avdu einu chayv b'achriyusan. And therefore, if it gets lost on Shabbos, the animal or whatever, or the baby that they're watching, so they're not chayv b'achriyus because it's considered to be a shomer chinam. So they have very limited responsibility. They're potter on gnei v'aveda. But v'im haya sachir Shabbos, sachir chodesh, sachir shana, sachir shavua. But if they're hired for the whole week, for the whole month, for the whole year, for the whole Shemitah cycle, meaning they're hired for more than just Shabbos itself, then no sin lo schar Shabbos. Then you could pay him for Shabbos also, because it's all one big paycheck that includes the payment for Shabbos and the payment for that week. That you're allowed to do.
So like the Shabbos groups, like.
So it would be an issue, and the assumption is that the people who are getting paid for Shabbos groups are getting paid for their preparation also. That there's some preparation involved, that's quite an assumption, because a lot of the group leaders don't do all that much preparation, but that's the assumption, that there's some sort of preparation involved, and that they're getting paid. Balei Kriya, same thing, we assume that they're getting, that they have to prepare during the week, and therefore they're getting paid for the preparation as well. It's a strong kasha. Caterer that does a Shabbos affair, he's got to prepare in advance, got to bring everything over, so he's getting paid for the preparation. We assume that's bavla. That itself is a chiddush, that's called havla. Because look what the Braisa says: if you're hired for the week, the month, the year, the Shemitah that's cycle, big. Not like 30 seconds before Shabbos plus 6 hours on Shabbos, that's called havla, is a chiddush. I think Chayyadim says like that. That's what we rely on. That's also called schar Shabbos, if I'm not mistaken. The Rama writes in Simon Shin Vav that if you're hired for the week and you make a tanai, that okay, I'm going to hire you for the week, $50 a day, let's say. So now I already put a daily rate on hiring you for the week. So we know that if you don't show up to work one day, let's say Shabbos, you're going to get paid $50 for every other day. So how can I then pay you for that day of Shabbos? So the Rama writes that he's not allowed to take Schar Shabbos. But the Mishmaru says that's only that if the reason you set that price is so that if you fire him in the middle of the week and you're able to fire him in the middle of the week, you'll only have to pay for the days that he already worked. So that's called a Schir Yom, that's not called a Schir Shavua. But if you hired him for the whole week at the rate of $50 a day and you can't fire him in middle of the week, which means he has a minimum of over the course of 7 days he's going to make $350, because you can't, even if you fire him in the middle, so then that would not be a violation of Schar Shabbos, Mishnah Berurah writes. So that's what we assume. Mishnah Berurah quotes from Shvos Yaakov that holds differently, that even if you're able to fire him, but if you didn't fire him, it's still called, it's still mutter. And the Chayyadam is the one that's Mechadesh, like we said, that it doesn't even have to be for a whole week or for even full days before Shabbos, it's just a little bit before Shabbos, on Erev Shabbos, Motzei Shabbos, that's good enough to be called Schar Shabbos Behavla'a. Very Nogel Lemaisa, obviously. So back to the Gemara, fourth line, Alam Zayin Beis, El Gabi Shabbos, Hainu Taima, De'in Koren B'tchila. So why is it then that you're not allowed to teach children the first time through on Shabbos? Mishum di yifnu avuson di yinuke lemitzvasa de Shabbata. Unbelievable ha'ara, says the Gemara, that the fathers of the children wait for Shabbos to be able to spend time with their children. And if the children had a regular school that day where they were learning new material on Shabbos, the fathers would feel guilty. They wouldn't want to take their children out of school, and then they wouldn't be proper on Shabbos of family spending time together. That it's important that families should spend time together on Shabbos. The parents look forward to spending the time with the children on Shabbos, so we make the learning a little less important on Shabbos, meaning the learning will be chazar only. They're not going to be learning the first time through. The parents shouldn't feel guilty if they have to take the kid away from school a little bit on Shabbos. It's assuming the kid's still learning on Shabbos, though, but that the learning is not going to be the new stuff that they're going to be learning on Shabbos. V'iba yaseima mishum de b'shabata achin v'shasin v'yakar le'an alma. Or it could just be the kids aren't going to be learning that well on Shabbos, because on Shabbos is when they really eat very well. And when you eat very well and you're full and you're stuffed, it's hard to motivate oneself to learn properly when one is just eaten so much. Kedamer Shmuel, shinu vesis tchilas tcholim me'ayim. Like Shmuel says, that when a person when a person eats differently than he normally does, so that causes him all sorts of stomach problems. Even if he's eating at a higher quality food than he normally eats, but still, just changing your habits, changing eating habits, having like one day where you just eat very differently is unhealthy for a person. So a person's not going to be able to be focused, a child's not going to be able to be focused if the rest of the week he's eating whatever, bread and water, and on Shabbos all of a sudden he's eating meat. It's going to upset his stomach. The Rabbi Yaakov Emden writes in the Sidri Yavitz that a Talmud Chacham who's Osek Bi'iyun B'Shabbos, who learns Bi'iyun on Shabbos, is Mechalal Shabbos. He says that a person should take it a little easier on Shabbos. So all the Achronim go wild on that Yaakov Emden. So what are you talking about? Is Ein Onek Shabbos Gadol Mizeh? The Chidah attacks us in Machzik Bracha, and he proves from all over the place that it's not true. And he says that Bizman Gedolei Ador Shebefaneinu, they used to dafka be koveya to learn Bi'iyun on Shabbos because that's the greatest Onek Shabbos. The Minchas Elazar says that maybe for a child, where it's not considered the greatest oneg, but once a person learns and sees the beauty of Torah, adrabba, learning bi'iyun is the greatest enjoyment that a person gets in his learning. Okay, ulamandi yamar schar piece of time in my time ulamar schar shimur. Now going back to these two explanations, why is it that you're allowed to get paid to teach a child mikra? So we have two reasons: either to get paid to teach him the trap, or you're getting paid for the babysitting. So the one who holds that it's about teaching him the trap, what's wrong with saying, why didn't he say that you're getting paid for the babysitting? So kasavar banos mika bayin shimur, because the Mishnah spoke about teaching sons and teaching daughters. Well, daughters generally don't need shimur; they don't need babysitting because girls are not so wild. Boys are a little wilder, so boys need babysitting. So it doesn't make sense that you'd be paid for babysitting for teaching girls who are 5, 6, 7 years old when you're teaching them mikra. The Gra in Yoredei, Resh Mem Vav Sivkan Chafei, says that from the fact that the Mishnah says that you melamid benosav, it says banavu benosav, you see like the Rambam writes in Hilchos Talmud Torah Parak Aleph Halach Yud Gimel, that even though in Maseches Sotah we say kol melamid is bito Torah kilu melamid tiflus, that one is not supposed to teach his daughter Torah, he says it's only kilu melamid tiflus, it's only like teaching her immorality when you're dealing with Torah Shebal Peh. But Torah Shebichsav, you're allowed to teach a girl, and the Gra says that the Rama, where did the Rama get the idea that Torah Shebichsav is different? It must be from our Mishnah, because we see that we're being Malamid Benosav. It's interesting, though, that the Rama doesn't mention in Hilchos Nedarim that a Madir's Malamid is Benosav Shalamudar Mikra. He doesn't mention that in Hilchos Nedarim. Why doesn't he mention it? If this is his sole source, that it's not Kilu Malam de Tiflis, he says, because the Rambam holds that in that same Rambam, in Talmud Torah, when he says that teaching a girl Mikra is not Kilu Malam de Tiflis, he says, but it's still not ideal. You're still not supposed to teach a girl even Mikra. So the Taz writes that where does the Rambam get that Torah Shebichsav is not considered Malam de Tiflis? He says, not from our mission. He gives a different source. He says, it's from Psukim and Chumash. Pesukim and Chumash say that we have something called Hakel, where the Melech reads the Mishnah Torah, reads from the Chumash to the entire Klal Yisrael. So who shows up? Nashim v'taf. Everybody comes. Why did Nashim come? So the Mishnah says Nashim lishmoa. They come to hear. So says the Taz. You see that they're allowed to hear the Chumash, and that it's not called that it's Malam de Tiflis. Aye, but the Ram says the Chachila, you shouldn't teach Torah Shabbosav. So what are they coming to hear? He says, no, you shouldn't teach Torah Shabbosav Bi'iyun to girls, but to learn a bit b'kiyus, to just lishmoa, not lulamed like the men do, but lishmoa, that would be okay. Obviously, the sugya of Talmud Torah for Nashim is a much bigger sugya than that, but that's just the Taz's comment, and obviously, it's a much broader sugya with many more marmakomos that have much different implications than just that shita of the Taz, but not for right now. Ulman diomer schar shimur, my time alomer schar pisuk taimim. What about the other opinion? The one that says that it's schar shimur, that you're getting paid when you teach mikra to children only for babysitting. Why didn't they say it's for schar pisuk taimim, that you're getting paid for the trap? Kasavra pisuk taimim daraisahu. He assumes that pisuk taimim is also daraisa. The teaching trap, that the trap itself is daraisa, and therefore teaching trap is not something you're allowed to get paid for. How important is trap when it comes to laning? The Shulchan Aruch and Sim Kuf Mem Beis Paskins that the someone who's karei b'Torah makes a mistake afilu b'diktuk os achas. he makes a mistake even in a single letter, you're allowed to correct him. And says the Ramah, but not if he makes a mistake in trap. If he makes a mistake in trap or nikud, that doesn't change any meaning of the word. It's gorinbo. We tell him, you know, you really should have prepared better, but not machzirino. So afterwards, we tell him he should have prepared better. During the laning, we don't make him go back. It's always a give and take a little bit, because on the one hand, you want the Kriyas Torah to be perfect, so that you're yotzi the mitzvah of Kriyas Torah in the best possible way. On the other hand, there's an isser to be mevayish b'nei chaver barabim, to embarrass somebody publicly. So here's a guy who's laning, and you're going to correct him. Every time you correct him, you're embarrassing him. So it's you have to weigh those two factors against each other, and there are different shitos in the Rishonim. There's a Mishnah Berurah quotes from the Sefer Shulchan Atzei Shittim that the Ramah says that you don't correct a mistake in trap or in nikud. That's only if it doesn't change the meaning. But if the trap is going to change the meaning, then you would correct him. There are those that hold, however, the Bach, that even something that changes the meaning, you'd still be yotzei b'di'evid, and therefore you should not correct him. When would you correct then, according to the Bach? Even if it changes the meaning, you're not going to correct the guy? If it's mecharif or megadif. If the person says, instead of Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, he says Hashem Acher, he reads the Dalai like a red. So then you'd have to correct. If Imamish says something that's apikorsis. But short of that, you wouldn't correct according to that shita. And then there's the shita of the Rambam, where the Rambam says you correct for any little thing, any tiny little thing you correct for. And the way Reb Chaim understood that is even a mistaken truck that you would correct for. Shlomo Zalman, Alich Shlomo, says that if a person makes a mistake in the trap, you don't have to correct him, especially if he doesn't do it all that often. So you don't have to correct him. And Shulchan Aruch says that that if there's some, if let's say no one's prepared to lane, so you should have you could still make a bracha on the Kriyas HaTorah, and you should have someone reading to the person from a chumash in a way that he'll be able to understand. That's what the Mishnah Berurah explains. That if you have someone who knows how to read it from a chumash, have someone on the side feeding it to him from a chumash. So if Moshe writes, I have a better idea. Why don't you have the chumash open on one side, the Torah on the other, let him read from the chumash and then read it from the Torah? And Moshe says, no, you can't do that. Moshe or Chaim Chayil Gimel Simin Yates says that you're not allowed to do that. Why? Because he says, even though he probably thinks he's going to be reading it from the Torah, what he's going to end up doing it when he's saying it out loud, he's going to be reading it from the chumash. Better to have someone feed it to him as he's looking in the Torah the entire time, and that way at least you know that he's actually reading it from the Torah. That's how Moshe paskens. Okay, back in the Gemara over here. So he said, Pesach time is Daraisa. Domer Avika Barav, Nomer Amchanan, Nomer Rav. What is that pasuk about? It teaches the following. That's a reference to Mikra. Mefurash ze targum. When it says mefurash, that's a reference to the targum. V'shum seichel elu hapsukim. And v'shum seichel is a reference to the psukim, meaning to know when to break up the psukim, a sof pasuk. And by the way, not all trap is equal. That's what the post can point out, that at the very least, you do need to know when a sof pasuk is. You need, because there's a halacha called pasuk lo paski Moshe anon lo paskinan, that you're not allowed to break up a pasuk that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't break up, and you're not allowed to attach pasukim that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't attach. So you have to at least know sof pasuk, and really, ideally, esnachta also, because an esnachta is the main break of a pasuk. That's the main way that we show how the pasuk is broken into two parts. So at the very least, once you get the esnachtas and the sof pasuks down. So anyway, Yavinu b'mikra is pisuk taimin. Yavinu b'mikra. See, here's a pasuk. It's a phrase in a pasuk. It teaches us pisuk taimin. It teaches us about trap. V'amrila elu amasoros. Others say, no, that's the masoros. What are the masoros in chumash? Where you have enlarged letters, smaller letters, a kri, a ksiv. You know, these kinds of things that we only know to put that in the Torah that way because of a masora. Amar Rabbi Yisak, so Gemara is going to bring four things that are that relate to the way we write or read the Torah that are halachal Moshe Misinai. Mikra Sofrim, the proper way to read that were given to the Rishonim who are called Sofrim. The Itor Sofrim, the extra letters that we have that are that in the Torah to make the language nicer, to enhance the language. The Karyan Veloksivan, that which we read but isn't actually written there. A Kri that's not written there. Ksivan Velokaryan. Or things that are written but we skip in the reading, halachal Moshe Misinai. All those things are halachal Moshe Misinai to keep those traditions. So mikra sofrim, what are examples of mikra sofrim? Eretz, Shamayim, Mitzrayim. By each of those words, there's a different way of being, of having the nikud on those words, whether it's in the middle of a pasuk or at the end of a pasuk, or an esnacht is like the end of the pasuk. In the middle of a pasuk, it would be Eretz, Shamayim, Mitzrayim. At the end of a pasuk or at an esnacht, it would be Oretz, Shamayim, Mitzrayim. So the nikud changes based on where it is. The fact that the nikud changes based on where it is in the pasuk, that is all halacha l'moshe misinai. Itur sofrim, what does itur sofrim mean? So that means the extra words that are added to make it a more beautiful language. For example, in Bereshis Perek Yudches, achar ta'avoru, when the pasuk says, v'asadu libchem achar ta'avoru. Or in Bereshis Perek Chavdalin, when it says, teisha v'naritan yom osar, that let Rivka stay with us for a while, achar telech, and then afterwards you will go. Or when the pasukim Bamidbar Parak Yud Beis that Tisagur Shavisam Michutz Machna VaAchar Teasef. So in all those cases, the word Achar is totally extra. You just say VeTeasef and then we'll go, or VeTeleif and then you'll go. So or Kidmu Sharim Achar Nognim in Tehillim. In all those cases, it doesn't have to say the word Achar. It could have just said Sadu Libchem VeTavoru Tisagur Shavisam VeTeasef. So the word achar is just a yipoy lashon. It's just to make it a more beautiful lashon. Tzidkascha kareel. So that's also an extra chaf. Why does it have to say kehare? It could have just said tzidkascha hare. So just like it says mishpatecha tahom rabba, it doesn't say an extra chaf over there, right? So the extra chaf in the first half of the pasuk is also a yipoy lashon. Karyan v'loksivan. What are examples of words that are read but are not actually written? Like pras in the pasuk in Shmuel and in Dibalechto, in the pasuk Belechto la'ashav yado benahar, where we add the word pras in the pasuk, or ish in the pasuk in Shmuel Beis, the kashar yish al ish bidvar elokim, where we add the word ish in the pasuk, even though it doesn't appear in the mikra, or ba'im in the pasuk in Yirmiyahu, dibinivnisa. So we v'nivnisa hi'ir la'Hashem, where we add the word ba'im, even though it's not actually there written in the Tanakh. It really just says hine yamim no'um Hashem. We add hine yamim ba'im no'um Hashem. Or the word la in the pasuk in Yirmiyah de'pleita, in the pasuk about pleita, where it says hishmiu el bavel rabim kol dorchi keshes chanu el saviv al yihi. So we read it la pleita. But the way it actually says it, the way it's actually written is pleita. Or the word s in hugad, where the pasuk says in Rus, hugad hugad li kol asher asis s chamosech. So we add the word s. Or elai dehagoren. The word elai in the pasuk in Rus about vatomre elai kol asher tomri. A lie, as we add, or a lie da saorim. Another pasuk in Rus. Vatomer sheish hasaorim ha'ila nasali kiyamar a lie al tavoy rekem al chamoseich. And halin karyin v'loksivin. All of these are words that are read but are not actually written. And what are examples of things that are written but are not read? Uksavin v'lokaryon. What's written but not read? So the word na diyislach. And say from Lachem Beis when it says b'shtach v'yasi beis rimon yislach na Hashem la'avdcha b'davar hazeh. The word na is written there, but we don't actually read that word na. Or zos dehamitzvah. The word zos in the Chumash v'zos hamitzvah achukim v'amishpatim. We don't read the word zos. Or yidroch in Sefer Yirmiyahu da hadorech in the pasuk al yidroch hadorech kashto, that we read it but it's not actually written there, or it's written there but we don't actually read it. Or chamesh to pas negev in the pasuk in Yecheskel, the pas negev chamesh meos rabas halafim. Or im dechi goel, the pasuk in Rus vatak yamnam ki im goel anochi. So halin ksavin v'lokaryan, all of those are things that are written but they are not read. So in all these categories, mikra sofrim, mikturi sofrim, kriyim v'loksivim, ksivim v'lokaryan, all of these things happen to be halachal moshim isinaka. Be'el shom pick up with Amar Ravacha Barada tomorrow.